The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. The voters of Virginia sent a message to America.
We're going to embrace our parents, not ignore them.
The man in the center of the spotlight this week is Glenn Youngkin.
We united people around education. It was not a divisive party issue on our side.
Glenn Youngkin was joined by several key GOP wins in the state.
The issue that really, I think, pushed them over the top was this frustration and the fury of parents in Northern Virginia about what's happening in our school.
The victory was also a repudiation of the current administration.
The Biden administration's expansionist government phase ended last night.
I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time, and on demand 24/7. Download, please, the Salem News Channel. And watch every Salem program every day. Learn more about me at HughHewitt.com and follow me on Twitter at Hugh Hewitt. Please follow this program as well at Town Hall Review. In 2020, Joe Biden took the state of Virginia by 10 points. 4 years earlier, in a year when Donald Trump became president, Hillary Clinton won Virginia by 7.5 points. The state was, perhaps, solid blue. The man in the center of the spotlight this week is Glenn Youngkin. Virginia's governor-elect joined me on Thursday morning to talk about the agenda ahead. Now, I've got to play for you very quickly, Governor, two quotes by my friend, and she is my friend, Yemi Chalcinder, at the Biden press conference yesterday. I just want her question so you get how your election is being framed in the national media. Cut number 8, the beginning, Ben, please. Can you play that for the governor-elect?
What should Democrats possibly do differently to avoid similar losses in November, especially as Republicans are now successfully running on culture war issues and false claims about criminal critical race theory?
Okay, stop right there, then play cut number 9 or follow up.
What's your message, though, for Democratic voters, especially Black voters, who see Republicans running on race, education, lying about critical race theory, and they're worried that Democrats don't have an
effect? Okay, stop right there. So false claims and lying. She's talking about you, Governor-elect. I don't believe you made any false claims. I don't believe you, Meech, knows what happens at Thomas Jefferson High School in Loudoun County or throughout the state. I don't believe she's read what Christopher Rufo has discovered about what Terry McAuliffe directed his Department of Education to do on critical race studies 8 years ago. But that is the Yemich is standing in for every other member of the left-leaning, completely co-opted part of the media that blocks and tackles for Democrats. What do you say in response to that?
Well, Hugh, losing is hard. I know. Okay. And this is what you would expect. I mean, we united people around education. And it was not a divisive party issue on our side. We brought people together from all walks of the political spectrum, Democrats, Republicans, independents. And we saw support across every minority group. And it was around education for our children. I mean, children are not a divisive issue. Children are the future. And the fact is that what we expressed on our campaign was a real agenda to get politics out of the classroom and work on educating children to be ready for life, college ready or career ready, with a curriculum that actually allows them to excel and run as fast as they can. And of course, there's always children that need some extra help, and investing in our special ed program in Virginia, because kids with disabilities in Virginia have really, really been challenged during this time period. So ours was a very practical, comprehensive approach. And I understand that there's a lot of folks in the left liberal side of the Democratic Party that look at this and want to try to see it through a completely different lens. It's just not true. And I know losing's hard for folks, and they're going to make excuses. But at the end of the day, we're pressing forward with an agenda that's going to unite folks around a great education in Virginia. We will have the best schools again. And I just look so forward to preparing Virginia's kids for a great life.
What worries me, though, Governor-elect, is that Yamiche isn't the Democrats. She's the media, and she's PBS. We pay for Yamiche, and people like her who are presenting what you did as a lie and as a false claim. CRT, which is a subset of CT, and I've been studying CT. You didn't have to go to law school. God bless you. I did since 1978. It's racism. Their central theory is that racism and disparate racial outcomes are the result of complex, changing, and often subtle and social and institutional dynamics rather than explicit and intentional prejudice of individuals. In other words, systemic racism. And the media has embraced it, and they believe it, and it's contrary to our 14th Amendment. It's contrary to Brown v. Board. How do you fight that? If it's in the water, if everyone thinks everybody's a racist, how do you fight that?
Well, I think first, Hugh, we actually appeal to the better side of ourselves. And I found myself during this campaign really drawn to those immortal words of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., where we are called to judge one another based on the content of our character, and not the color of our skin. And I think we have to keep talking about it. We have to keep talking about it, what it means to actually focus on character and not focus on race. And let's be clear. Of course, racism exists. It always has, and it always will. We have to try to root it out when we see elements of it. But at the end of the day, we're called to love one another, and we have to try to live our lives that way. And the moment that we throw in the towel and concede that we have to all of a sudden start teaching our children to view everything through a lens of race, we've all of a sudden lost. And I just think we're better than that. I think Virginians are better than that. I think there are shared values that everyone can in fact pull together and embrace, that we're going to focus on our children's future and helping them in fact get ready and just reject this whole concept that we have to teach everyone that race is at the base of everything we do.
Virginia was the first big election since the inauguration of President Biden and the first opportunity for Americans to respond to his aggressive left agenda. They spoke. They were loud. They were clear. The day after, political writer John Fund discussed the results with my friend and colleague, Dennis Prager.
Is yesterday a repudiation of Biden or of Democratic policies?
All of the above.
Go on.
Well, look at what was on the ballot in Virginia. Yes, there was Glenn Youngkin versus Terry McAuliffe. Yes, Glenn Youngkin had a positive agenda, repealing the car tax, helping people with increasing the standard deduction, and fighting, of course, critical race theory and opening up more charter schools. Virginia only has 8 charter schools in the whole state. And Terry McAuliffe was completely negative. All he could do was yell, Donald Trump, Donald Trump, Donald Trump, and play Halloween throughout the fall campaign. So there, of course, you had the Biden unpopularity because Biden has failed. Biden is pursuing far more liberal policies than he said he would in the campaign. At the same time, though, you had local issues that played right to conservative strengths, and that's why Glenn Youngkin won. That's why the Republicans took control of the House of Delegates, and that's why the lieutenant governor of Virginia is now a Jamaican immigrant and former Marine, the first black female ever elected to statewide office. And they also won the attorney general's race with the son of Cuban refugees. The Biden administration's expansionist government phase ended last night.
I don't know what word, hurricane, tsunami, earthquake, whatever term you wish to use. Virginia, not only the governor in a state, what was it? Biden won Virginia. Let me ask John Fund, because he's a living encyclopedia. John, how much did Biden win? Sorry?
10 points. 10 points.
10 points. And now they lost the attorney general and the lieutenant governor and the state house of representatives, or as they call it, what is it? The state house of what? Delegates?
Delegates.
Is that the word?
Delegates. The state senate was not up this time, Dennis, but it's divided 21 Democrats, 19 Republicans. All Youngkin has to do, and previous governors have done that, is find a Democrat in a competitive district to appoint to a cabinet or advisory position that has a nice
and then open up an election.
And then there'll be a special election. And then Winsome Sears, the new lieutenant governor, the African-American Republican lieutenant governor, would then break the tie and turn over the state senate to the Republicans.
What happened in Seattle? That's the one I didn't mention.
Well, the retiring, remember the woman who set up the autonomous, or allowed the autonomous zone to be set up by the anarchists and the...
Right. Now, what was her, what's her position? What is her political...
She was mayor of Seattle, Jenny Durkin, and they turned down the police station. She didn't rescue the police officers there. They had to flee for their lives. And basically, they set up this autonomous zone, which existed for a couple of months. She said, we'll just have our own summer of love in Seattle. Well, she was so reviled for this cowardice that she retired. So there's an open mayor's race. The two candidates were a woman named Loretta Gonzalez and a man named Keith Harrell. Both had served on the city council in Seattle. It turns out that Gonzalez was a Marxist, an acolyte of AOC, and she ran about even with him in the first round of the primary for the mayor's race, nonpartisan. And this guy turned out to be a pro-business, pro-law enforcement, against defunding the police, and frankly, believe it or not, a former Republican. And he won a smashing victory for mayor of Seattle. And at the same time, the city attorney, who was a defund the left, George Soros acolyte, he lost to a prosecutor who was a former Republican as well.
So I didn't know this one. City attorney of Seattle is also going to a Republican. Is that correct, John?
Yes. Law and order is going to be on the agenda once again in Seattle, and the Soros prosecutor was sent packing.
Has the left learned anything from yesterday?
Yes. Under no circumstances must you ever follow Terry McAuliffe's example and tell the voters what you really believe. But let me tell you something that happened in New York State. You know, Joe Biden won New York State by 25 points. And the Democratic legislature, which has an iron grip on the state, decided, well, you know, we want to really cement our rule. They put three constitutional amendments on the ballot yesterday. The first one was, we're going to make it much easier for the Democratic legislature to gerrymander the state using abstract art and computers to lock down and kick out Republican incumbents the way they just did in Illinois. Secondly, we're going to create a new same-day voter registration system, which is a open invitation to fraud and misuse. It allows people to register and vote using any address, pretending that they're living in the state when they really just drove across the border. And third, created a system in which it would make it much easier to get an absentee mail-in ballot mailed to you wherever you are, no restrictions, no safeguards. Each of those measures were on the ballot. The union spent millions to promote them, and 60% plus of New York State residents voted against all three of them. They failed miserably. And the media, the lamestream media, says that voters don't care about election integrity. Well, in liberal New York State, they sure did.
More on the big win in Virginia.
This is a blue state we're talking about.
The Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Many Democrats reacted to the loss in Virginia with contempt, and that's not entirely uncommon. There are times when a brutal loss takes time to fully digest and respond properly. There are certainly Democrats in red states or in competitive districts who are much more nervous about their careers today than they were just a week ago, and that could and should have an impact on how they govern over the course of the next year. Stephen Moore served as Governor-elect Youngkin's economic advisor during his campaign. He joined Dan Propp, Amy Jacobson on AM 560 The Answer out of Chicago.
I was at the big victory celebration in Chantilly, Virginia last night. And it was just a complete sweep. Not only did the Republicans win at the top with Von Youngkin. By the way, I was his economic advisor throughout the campaign. Just ran an incredible, very professional campaign all the way. handled the Trump issue really well. He basically said, you know, I have the always Trumpers and the never Trumpers with me, and he just was quite strong. And the issue that really, I think, pushed him over the top was this frustration and the fury of parents in Northern Virginia about what's happening in our school. And when as soon as McAuliffe said that, I don't think that parents should be involved in telling teachers what to teach. I thought this race is over, and that's where he won, was in those pretty liberal, Northern Virginia suburbs. Parents want to be involved in their schools and what their kids are learning. I hope that everyone around the country understands that. Every politician understands that message. But Republicans also, it appears, they've won back the House, the state House in Virginia. I mean, this is a blue state we're talking about. This is a state, Dan and Amy, that was won by Biden by 10 points last year.
Right. So to my question, where are congressional Democrats right now? I mean, by the way, the polling on Socialist Tax and Spendathon isn't very good either. Only 25% of Americans think it will improve their lives. The 32% say it won't. The others are just befuddled because there's so much in it. So it seems like this is a pretty good environment for you to, as you say, kill the bill.
Yeah, well, let me celebrate for a minute here, Dan. Come on.
Let's go. Let's get on to the next thing.
He's still on his high, man. We
need to leverage this victory. Come on. Let's go.
But anyway, so and incidentally, I mean, I saw what was happening in New Jersey, too, from a mile away. And I think probably in the end, Murphy's going to pull that out. But by God, that's a state that Biden won by 15 points. And that's quite a swing there. So how does this affect the monstrosity of that $4 trillion spending bill? I wouldn't say it's a nail in the coffin. It doesn't bury the bill. But this is a really, really bad sign. And this is one of the reasons that our groups were so involved in helping Youngkin win, because we knew that it would take all the wind out of any sail, any wind that was left in the sails of this bill. The big question now is, will the Democrats simply move forward? Will they take half a loaf? Will they take this sham infrastructure bill, which is a terrible bill in and of itself, and just go home and say, look, we passed an infrastructure bill? Our biggest allies in this, interestingly enough, are the squad. You know, the squad, the AOC group, the far, far, you know, there's a left wing of the Democratic Party, there's a far left, and then there's a far, far left of the Democratic Party. And they have been holding up the infrastructure bill, which, again, is a sham. And they say they won't allow a vote on the infrastructure bill until there's been a vote on this other $4 trillion bill, which they're nowhere near having the votes for. So everything's gummied up right now in Washington, which is just what we want. The less Washington does right now, the better for the health of the American people and the health of our country.
The Build Back Better program is in jeopardy now, as is much of the Biden agenda, as Democrats in red and purple districts seek cover as 2022 fast approaches. One troubling item on the Biden agenda is raising taxes. Ohio Congressman Jim Jordan discussed the problems with that effort even before the Virginia decision. He was on with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer, out of Cleveland.
Joe Biden desperately wanted to get his Build Back Broke program through before he went on his European trip. It didn't work. The House won't vote on it because of the House progressives, who say it's not progressive enough. Now, here's the deal. Mm-hmm. As I understand it, and you tell me where I'm wrong and then give me your analysis, the $3.5 trillion budget reconciliation bill has been slashed to about $1.5 to $1.75 trillion, which is what Joe Manchin said it would need to be at the max before he would consider voting for it. But the New York Post congressman did a deep dive into this. Did they really slash $1.75 trillion out of this, or did they just limit the time that it would be spent over? In other words, rather than a decade, it's only going to be there for a few years, and then it's going to be up to future Congresses and presidents to allow it to expire or to renew it. So it's not really any spending being cut. They're just essentially making it look like that on paper, so people will say, oh, well, it's only $1.75 trillion. I can go with that.
Yeah, no, that's exactly the game they're playing. It's budget gimmicks. We all knew this is what they would try to do. And frankly, even though it's obnoxious levels of spending, regardless of what time frame they allocate to it, It's not just the spending that's so bad for our country, for families, and for our economy. It's the policy in it. I mean, they're getting ready to raise everyone's taxes. Now, they say, oh, no, it's not going to cost anything, and we're only going to go focus on billionaires and millionaires. But you know how that works. It's always middle-class families who get hurt. And that's what we're seeing now with all their bad policies, the inflation, the price of gas, et cetera. So this is a bad plan. This is the fourth time that Pelosi has said there's going to be a vote. And there winds up not being a vote because, again, there's a couple people in the Democrat Party who understand just how ridiculous this is and how much harm it'll cause to the harm they've already done to the American economy and to the American people.
Let's talk about some of the insanity contained within this, even at the quote-unquote scale down, even though we both know that it's not that. $500 billion, but if my math is correct, that's $500 billion for climate change. Where would that money be going? And once again, why would that be so essential right now for a country that is in economic dire straits, a nation that's $30 trillion in debt, a nation that has, you know, used to be energy independent, by the way, just as recently as a year ago when President Trump was in charge. Now we're going to pour $500 billion into climate change, which is only a drop in their wish list bucket.
They're so focused on this climate change and driving up the cost of energy for American families that yesterday in a hearing, Democrat members of Congress were badgering companies, oil and gas companies, saying you need to decrease production. Now, think about that. You, at the same time, they're badgering and pushing American companies to decrease production. What did Joe Biden do just a few months ago? He begged OPEC to increase production. Now, tell me how that's going to help American energy needs. And also, how is that going to help climate change? We've actually reduced CO2 emissions in this country without mandates and crazy laws passed by Congress. We did it because we're the good stewards of our resources. We're doing it because that makes sense. That's just good business practice. And now these same companies are being hounded and harassed by Democrat members of Congress saying, oh, don't increase production. We'd rather have foreigners do that where they don't. Where CO2 emissions have went up all over the planet, but not here in the United States. It makes no sense, but everything they've done makes no sense, frankly.
Well, you're right, of course, but what's really amazing is do they even compare notes? I mean, when Joe Biden is saying, yeah, and has Jen Psaki out there saying we're begging OPEC to ramp up their production, and then Democrat legislators say we really want you to cut your production, do they even talk to one another before they come out with their, you know, with their ridiculous ideas?
It sure doesn't seem so. And I tell you, I think what happens with these guys is they're so used to the mainstream press covering for them, not reporting the facts, not reporting the truth, not holding them accountable when they say something stupid.
Coming up.
Hold on, Virginia. Help is on the way. The cavalry has arrived.
The Town Hall Review returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. One of the best stories out of Tuesday evening was the victory of Winsome Sear, the first black woman elected to a statewide office in Virginia.
Hold on, Virginia. Help is on the way. The cavalry has arrived.
Salem host Mike Gallagher looks at her remarkable victory.
The first African-American woman to hold this office, the first black woman to hold this office, the lieutenant governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, and CNN didn't bother to cover a second of it. MSNBC barely didn't even mention it. They didn't carry her. So as Joy Reid is spouting her racist hate, you would think Joy Reid would appreciate another black woman achieving such success. Oh, no, no, no. She's not the right kind of black woman, right, Joy-Ann Reid? Well, this is an incredible patriot. Her story is astounding. She was in a Salvation Army homeless shelter at one point. Got out, made something of her life, an incredible impact in her life, became a Marine. I believe she and her husband are both, I think they're both Marines, became the lieutenant governor of the state of Virginia. Here was what viewers of MSNBC or CNN didn't see.
I am not even first generation American. When I joined the Marine Corps, I was still a Jamaican. But this country had done so much for me. I was willing to die for this country. USA! And so I say to you, victory indeed. But I say to you, there are some who want to divide us, and we must not let that happen. They would like us to believe we are back in 1963 when my father came. We can live where we want. We can eat where we want. We own the water fountains. We have had a black president elected not once but twice, and here I am, living proof. In case you haven't noticed, I am black, and I have been black all my life. But that's not what this is about. What we are going to do is we are going to now be about the business of the Commonwealth. We have things to tend to. We are going to fully fund our historically black colleges and universities. You're going to hear from your governor-elect, Glenn Youngkin, and he's got a day one plan that I'm already tired about. Don't know how we're going to make it to day two. But he's going to make sure we keep more of our money in our pockets, because he's going to get rid of all kinds of taxes. We're going to have safer neighborhoods, safer communities, and our children are going to get a good education.
Wow. I mean, and guess what? She's a Republican. She's the Republicans. She's a Republican story. And more than that, she's an American story. Listen to what she said about, I love this part of her speech, what she's taught when she talks about help is on the way. This is how we feel right now in America, like help is on the way. The troops have arrived.
It's a historic night. Yes, it is. But I didn't run to make history. I just wanted to leave it better than I found it. To do that, we're going to have transparent government. And as I used to say as we were on the trail, hold on, Virginia, help is on the way. The cavalry has arrived. Thank you. God bless you.
I got chills. I mean, I got tears in my eyes because, and a great tweet from Ben Shapiro. He is such a prolific tweeter, among other great podcaster and all. Here's what Ben Shapiro tweeted. Condolences to Virginia on becoming radically racist again, according to the media, by electing a black female lieutenant governor and a Cuban-American attorney general, rejecting racial essentialism in schools, and replacing a Democrat governor who wore an actual KKK outfit. Yeah, we're such racists, we Republicans, huh?
Coming up, how legal immigration is special in America.
There are people who live next to me who would be killing each other in other situations.
The Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Illegal immigration remains a hot topic in the United States as states that border Mexico struggle to slow the tide. In Europe, unchecked immigration has had disastrous consequences. National Review's David Harsanyi argues we should learn from their mistakes. He has a new book out titled Eurotrash: Why America Must Reject the Failed Ideas of a Dying Continent. Harsanyi spoke with Dennis Prager.
So there were two big statements in your subtitle, and that is failed ideas and dying continent. Let me begin with the latter. How is Europe dying in your view?
Well, it's dying literally, I guess, because it's an old place. Europeans do not have children. Germany, I believe, is the second year oldest advanced country after Japan. And because they don't have children, I think that the place loses its vibrancy. It becomes more insipid in many ways, but also it has to make up for it by allowing mass immigration. And obviously, at least obvious to me, is that there's nothing wrong with immigration itself if you do it right. But in Europe, they don't do it right. We, you know, setting aside illegal immigration for a minute, our immigration policy has been the most successful in mankind's history. We assimilate people in incredible ways. I live near D.C. here in my suburb. There are people who live next to me who would be killing each other in other situations. Pakistanis live next to Indians. They send their kids to the same schools, etc. This is a miracle in human history, and we don't see that in Europe, not today. You have generational ghettos, places with extremely high unemployment, but most importantly, people who don't accept the ideals of liberalism that once defined European life, or at least, you know, notionally sometimes, but they don't accept it, and there is no assimilation, so it creates all kinds of tensions in society, hyper-nationalistic, blowback, things like that, and it's just unhealthy. And we don't have that, at least not yet.
I cannot emphasize how important your points are too much. So let me just tell my listeners that they have, if they're regular listeners, they've heard me say on a number of occasions, a first-generation Turk in the United States is your neighbor Joe. A third-generation Turk in Germany who doesn't speak Turkish, who's fluent in German, is still a Turk. And that has been, unless the left stops that because they're dividing Americans for the first time by ethnicity, that has been the unique achievement of our country compared to Europe. Is that a fair restatement of what you said?
Absolutely. And the woke kind of outlook where, you know, identitarian, you are your color or you are a Turk rather than an American first. That is an incredibly dangerous idea because it divides us in ways that we've never been divided before.
That's right. That's exactly right. So it's a dying continent, literally. You don't only mean its ideas are sclerotic. They're fading away because they don't give birth.
Yeah, they're literally not. Yeah, they're literally not having children. Now we're on the same trajectory, just slower. And it should be quickly mentioned as well that some people do have children in Europe, and those are mostly Islamic communities and immigrants. And as we mentioned before, if they're not accepting that they're French or German or
right.
European,
so that's no
and
help.
Having many kids,
yeah, that's no help for the country. Exactly.
No.
So, by the way, I'm going to just bounce an idea off you. You're completely free to reject it. But I am an outlier in conservative life in that my explanation for not having children is a religious one. Secularism does not produce the urge, the need, the value of having children like religion does.
Well, I will do one better, I think, and tell you that I am a secular person, and I believe that faith is incredibly important in that regard and in many, many others. The more religious people are, the more patriotic they are, because the more they believe there's something bigger than themselves. They don't look to the state, they look to something bigger. And in the United States, that has always been the case. The more religious you are, the more you believe in the Constitution, as it's supposed to be believed in, as something not handed to you by government, but by God. And in Europe, people have constantly been looking for ways to replace that. So they look to fascism or communism or this giant bureaucratic state they now have. And That's why also I think they're having fewer children. I think that's why they don't treat life the way we do, with the respect that we do. And that leads to a lot of the other problems we see.
See, you're my ideal. I don't care whether a person is religious or secular. I care whether they understand how important religion is. You're in the latter category, and I'm just thrilled to hear that. I don't care what you are personally, but to understand the centrality of faith to the democratic Western experiment, that's what matters to me.
It is, yeah. I mean, it's so vital in the United States, more than people I think some understand. There are, in this country, there has been a competition, not only economically, but of faith, and the way faiths compete against each other for parishioners, let's say, or through ideas, but it's always been a big part of community and localism and things like that and family. And without it, this is why I oppose a welfare state as well, because it just it elbows out charity, it elbows out churches. It starts to dictate morality to you, and I don't trust politicians to do that. And that, I think, is just a big problem with the welfare state in Europe and the growing welfare state that progressives, for the most part, want to build here.
God, those words are gems. Now let's talk about the gist of the book, The Failed Ideas.
Well, the most important, as I just mentioned, though it's not as exciting to talk about, is the gigantic bureaucratic state in Europe. It's layered from top down, mm-hmm. European Union, and so on. The European Union actually was based on the idea of American federalism initially in the 50s when people first began talking about it, but it's become much more centralized, where it's crushing, we're trying to crush local cultures in the way that Hungarians have a long culture that wasn't born yesterday and matters to them, and French have their own, etc. But the European Union tries to make everyone essentially be the same or more like Germany, I guess. The problem with that, of course, is that you see it in America recently. The CDC starts running the country, or, you know, Donald Trump's elected and the State Department decides they can't be president. This is a dangerous thing for any kind of democratic state or republic.
Go to Town Hall Review to hear the entire conversation between Prager and Harsanyi about Eurotrash. Coming up.
But you know who didn't go to the big climate change summit? China. You know who didn't go to the climate change summit? Russia.
The final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt when we return.
Hi, I'm Georgine Rice. This week in the Christian Outlook, sponsored by the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy, an election night that catches the attention of the nation.
What is really clear is that shocks are being sent through the system.
Glenn Youngkin, the Republican, wins in the very blue Commonwealth of Virginia.
We're going to embrace our parents, not ignore them.
My hometown of Portland grants bereavement leave to women who've had an abortion.
It's revealing the truth that they didn't mean to reveal, which is that abortion is a tragedy. It is something to be grieved.
And the impact of COVID on church life, with a challenge to move away from the pandemic live stream.
Our faith is an opportunity to be able to live in community with one another.
Be sure to join us and visit our website at christianoutlook.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Biden's trip to the climate change summit got a lot of attention right from the beginning as the president appeared to struggle to stay awake. A video showing a dozing president, and who could blame him? The subject was tiring. But there was more to the summit than one video capture. Here's Salem host Mike Gallagher.
There is so little respect for Joe Biden, as Tammy Bruce pointed out, with a great monologue. Here's Tammy Bruce, who has a very pointed take on our world standing. You know, one of the big accusations of the Trump administration is that the world didn't respect us. Well, that was a lie. The world most certainly did respect us under President Trump. And frankly, and I'll be crude, they weren't sure if he'd nuke them to kingdom come. He wouldn't have, but you know what? He stood for America first. He put America first, not America last. And do you realize that this stupid climate summit show that they got going on in where are they, Scotland or wherever the hell Biden is, pardon my language, falling asleep? Oh, yeah. Now there's a video that's going viral of Biden sitting there with his arms folded, nodding off at the climate change summit. I mean, we've got historic failures going on in America, and Biden wants to showboat at a climate change summit in Scotland. But do you know who didn't go to the big climate change summit? China. You know who didn't go to the climate change summit? Russia. You know who didn't go to the big climate change summit? Saudi Arabia. That's because these countries don't respect the United States of America under the leadership of Joe Biden.
At this incredibly important Glasgow scenario where everyone's going to save the planet, Saudi Arabia, China, and Russia don't show up. They just didn't show up. That is how little that the bad guys and some of the marginal bad guys in the world think of the world now and what they must do. Because you're right, there is no American precedency. You know, nothing they decide. Boris Johnson said, well, what's happened here, it's like a drop in the ocean. Well, it's because no one takes Joe Biden seriously. There is no reason to show up. There will be no price to pay. There is no leadership in the United States. They're all doing their own thing.
Thanks for joining us for the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Catch up on earlier episodes at our website, townhallreview.com, and sign up for a daily dose of the best in talk radio. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Schumann and producers Charlie Richards, David Pouchon, Michael Cook, Alex Perez, Ben Brigman, Adam Ramsey, and of course, Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for joining us.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.